Welcome, everyone, to episode 206 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we're going to talk about Zion Williamson's injury, what it means for the NCAA, the NBA's one-and-done rule, all that good stuff. We're also going to talk about Jeff Van Gundy wanting to eliminate the All-Star game, and DeMarcus Cousins starting to get a little frustrated with his role and play as of late. Before we get into all that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. And we're now being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today is not my very stable genius of a co-host, Morten Jensen. He's actually feeling a little under the weather, so we'll have him back on the next episode. Instead, we have a special guest, Josh Eberle, a writer at NBA Canada. So Josh, how's it going, man?
It's going well. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. So before we get underway, let our listeners know where they can find you on Twitter and where else they can find your work.
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at Josh Eberle, and most of my stuff would either go to Hoop or to NBA Canada, so you can find me there. And and I got my own podcast, so Hot Takes and Shot Fakes, also on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, all the works.
Nice. Yeah, so give Josh a follow. He's a really good, entertaining guy to follow on Twitter. I love the lines of the night, even though I harass you every time Joel Embiid's not in it. All right, Josh. So I think we need to start with Zion Williamson, since that was really, you know, the big story of the week, in part because the NBA didn't come back till Thursday night. So we're just getting our feet wet and teams are playing like garbage. So there's not a whole lot to talk about on the NBA side of things. But Wednesday night, it's Duke UNC. Tickets are going for like $3,000 a pop. Zion, within the first minute, plants wrong, blows out his shoe, suffers what looked like a very bad injury at first. Like, he grabbed his knee right away, and like everyone was just like, oh God, like, did this kid just blow out his knee, like ruin his draft stock? Thankfully, it turned out to be only like a grade one knee sprain. He's day to day. Seems like he should be fine. It will have no impact on his draft stock whatsoever. But naturally, you know, in that 12-20 hour vacuum, or however long we went without knowing the severity of the injury, that led to really, it sounds like a perfect thing for your podcast. A lot of hot takes about, you know, what Zion should do for his future, and then kind of what it means for both the NCAA and the NBA. So first, I mean, what was your first reaction when you saw Zion go down without knowing how bad the injury was?
This might be the wrong thing to say or to think, but in the moment it was very much, did he just blow a shoe? Like I wasn't even worried about the injuries. Like, how is that possible? Like,
yeah.
I've still been thinking about like how did he land with what kind of force to make a shoe explode? Like, that's rather impressive. Like, that's back up. I'm thinking back to like Shaq actually destroying rims and glass on backboards for the last time something that powerful happened in the game. But just obviously worry for the kid. And then the conversation on Twitter, it seems hot takey, but it really does seem straightforward when you stop trying to spin it into what he is or isn't and just look at the best thing for his future. Mm-hmm. And for myself, I was like, there's no reason for him to ever play at Duke again. And there are a ton of arguments coming from a lot of people, and we can go through those one by one and some of the spin that was being thrown out there. But at the end of the day, if you're looking at what's best for this kid and his future and for him financially, it's not to play at Duke again.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, I think part of it is, like, Zion has said he would have gone to college even if the one-and-done rule didn't exist. So, like, this is an individual decision for every player. And we'll get into the one-and-done stuff shortly, since there is some news on that front this week as well. I think that we almost, like, lost the forest through the trees with the whole Zion thing, at least on Twitter, because a lot of it was, you know, like, should this kid come back? Should he not? It's up to him. Like, he should do whatever makes him happy. He knows the risk, obviously, but you know, part of the problem is the one and done rule existing. Like, there's no reason this kid shouldn't have been able to just go to the NBA right out of high school. And then people were rightfully pointing out, well, you know, Duke has in some ways benefited him because he was like the number five prospect coming out of high school. So that does beg the question of, had the one and done rule not existed, where would he have gone in the draft last year? Like, would he have been a top five pick? He would not have been the consensus number one overall pick, most likely. So, in theory, going to Duke helped him in that regard. But as you said, like, financially, there is no reason. I mean, this kid's looking at $40 million, you know, realistically, at least $40 million come June. And if he suffers, like, most likely, he is so far ahead of everyone else in his class that, God forbid, even if he did suffer a major injury, I still think he would probably go number one. But at least that raises the element of the doubt that, you know, like, do you really want to test that? Like, do you really want to risk tearing your Achilles? Like, all right, here you go. Am I still the number one pick? I don't know.
Yeah, there are some layers there. And, like, fine, give some credence to the conversation that Duke boosted his draft stock some. You know, on every board I was looking at before the year, he was top three, top four. Mm-hmm. And him going to one, yeah, absolutely. But I think this is a process of what was available more so than Duke. Like, I mean, if the move right now and what was cool and what had been done by, you know, the prior generation was to go to the G League or go to Europe, I think he still boosts his stock playing wherever he's playing because that's where people would eventually be watching. And I mean, that's another conversation. But if this injury had been more serious, as you said, if he tore his Achilles, if he tore his MCL, and he did fall to five, or he did fall to six, or there was some real, real concern, and maybe became like a Michael Porter situation where, like, we're not sure he's going to play at all next year, then he does cost himself some money, and maybe he doesn't come back. You know, not everyone rehabs the same, is the same player after an injury like that. It is a small chance. No one's saying, like, if he plays in the tournament for Duke, he's guaranteed going to hurt himself, but why would you risk that when you're getting no there is no benefit to his professional career to play six or seven more games at Duke. That's at the end of the day.
Right. Yeah, and Boogie Cousins even came out and said that afterward. He said, like, the NCAA is BS. Like, Zion is the only one not profiting off of Zion right now, which is unfair. So
it is. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I think that's kind of, like, when I mentioned, you know, losing the forest through the trees, like, that's where my mind went was, look, there are a lot of arguments, you know, a lot of people over the years have said, like, all right, just pay the athletes. And I love that idea in theory, but that particular idea is very tricky to execute because, for one, you have Title IX to worry about, which prohibits discrimination on the basis of sex. So if you cannot just pay football and men basketball players and not pay any female athletes. That, like, would just not be allowed. It would be sued to oblivion. But those are the two sports, by and large, that are the only revenue-generating sports. And, you know, colleges have come out and said, like, these are the reasons we can offer all of these other sports that don't make us money, because we're making so much money off of these, but, you know, then we don't have enough money to pay the players. So that, like, the pay the players argument, I get it, but it is trickier than I think a lot of people acknowledge right off the bat. That said, there is no reason at all that players should not be able to profit off of their likeness. You can sign autographs, appear in ads, whatever. There's no reason, because the only thing that you're, like, you can let male and female athletes do it. It comes at no cost to the university. The only cost to the university is that Nike is paying the athlete instead of paying the player, or paying the school, maybe. So, like, I guess that's a consideration. But aside from that, like, you know, I could see a school arguing, well, yeah, you know, some shady booster is going to pay my athlete, like, $100,000 to appear for one day and sign autographs. But, like, we clearly know that stuff is happening now. The FBI had a huge investigation that revealed all kinds of shady stuff like that. Like, kids are getting money to go to certain schools already. Let's just, like, put it above the table so at least you can track it a little better.
And just, I don't, maybe it's just a victim of tradition, or, I mean, what's so bad about that? I mean, if some shady booster wants to have Zion come out and sign kicks for an hour at his coffee shop or at his tech store or wherever, I mean, what do we care? Why does the NCAA care? Does that cheapen the sport? Does that lessen the product? If anything, it's extra marketing for a star in your league. So, I mean, we're just behind the times. And I agree with you. we both know the NCAA basketball and football would be the lion's share of the coin. But there is a way where you could do revenue sharing, just like the NFL does, just like the NBA does, where, okay, 10% of total profit is going to go to player salaries, and the majority of that will go to male or men's football and basketball players because they bring in that money and those TV deals, et cetera. But you could still take a portion of that 10% and spread that around to all athletes so that, you know, everybody gets a piece, and then at least, you know, there's some authenticity to it, and there would be less of this cry for why are players not getting paid. I mean, there are things that the NCAA could have done to combat this to some degree, and the likeness thing is the easiest call. I just don't, but that doesn't seem to be an interest from their side to give up any piece of the pie.
Right, right, which is, yeah, as you said, like, there is no harm to it. I mean, I guess some schools, like some mid-major schools, would say, okay, well, that just gives Duke and Kentucky even more of an advantage in recruiting over us because they can, you know, now they could just legally give or, like, legally set up meetings with these big boosters. Like, Oregon, with Nike right there, will just have Nike funneling money to our players. And, like, you know, a Davidson or a BYU is never going to be able to compete with that. But, like, Duke and Kentucky are getting all the top-tier recruits anyway. Like, Duke had the top three recruits of this year's class.
It's already the world we live in, right? I mean, and that's why, honestly, like, on the broader conversation here, I think that's why the G League is the natural path over the next 10 years. I just think we eventually get rid of the rule where there's some, you know, like, right now the salary is, what, $110,000 is what they're being offered for select players?
Yeah.
Eventually, we get rid of that. The one-and-done rule goes away, and 18-year-old players who are good but not good enough, like they're not the Zions, they're not the Barretts, go to the G League, and they make the 300-and-something K, and that league becomes its own television package, and everyone watches that too, because the top players will eventually go there to get money above board, and it just takes a few players to see the light there and for the league to ease off and, you know, raise that money a little bit. And I think that will be, over the next 10 years, we'll see the G League just become the natural first step rather than the NCAA. But, you know, it's going to take time.
Yeah, right. It definitely would take, you know, a couple guys have gone that route, but it I think it would take, like, some real big-name trailblazers, and then, like, you just need to keep building upon that foundation instead of these, like, one-off cases, basically.
Yeah, for sure. And there is something, too, like, the generation before you, you know, like, you watched these famous NBA players go to these colleges, and you heard about Jordan at UNC, and, you know, like, you want to go and follow that path and do your own thing, and you're a kid, and college is exciting, but at the end of the day, they go and they take sports med, or they take whatever, and they fill a year of credits, and right. It's like, they're not getting anything out of it, and all those people, well, what about the scholarships? Are scholarships worth nothing? I'm like, to take 8 bogus courses over the course of a year, knowing what it is, like, it's just been a phony conversation for a long time. And, you know, with Zion hurting himself this weekend, I kept seeing, like, well, why would he play? Well, maybe because he loves the game and his teammates. I'm like, I hate that argument, because he doesn't hate the game, or he doesn't not love the game, because he wants to protect his future, take care of his family, and get what's owed to him as an entertainer, as an athlete. That no other profession are you like, well, if you take a raise, or you protect yourself, you want to feed yourself in the future, you certainly don't love what you do. Like, that. Right. It's just a stupid conversation.
Right, yeah, and we've, like, reached the point in college football, at least, when these kids sit themselves out of bowl games, and now everyone's like, yeah, that's smart. Why would you incur the risk? You see, like, a Jalen Smith a couple years ago, like, blows up his knee, falls to the second round, misses an entire year, and is, like, just now rounding back into form. Like, that was a risk he didn't need to take, and now I think other guys have seen that, and are like, oh, okay, this is dumb. I'm going to make millions of dollars soon. Why would I subject myself to the one biggest risk between now and my gigantic payday? I understand. Like, maybe if the one-and-dones didn't exist, Zion still would have gone to college. Maybe he doesn't care about getting paid. Like, we'll just go ahead and pretend that he's not getting some money under the table. I'm sure everything is just hunky-dory at Duke right now. But I don't know. I just think even if Zion is the case where he really doesn't care and, like, he really is that motivated to come back and win a title, like, I don't think that's the case for every single player. And I think, like, holding them to this standard is just kind of dumb. Like, as you said, it's not a lack of love for the game. The kid's literally going to play in the NBA for the next 15 years. Like, he's going to devote his entire professional career to playing basketball. He clearly loves the game. It's just like, he also wants to get that $40 million locked in before something tragic happens. And he probably saw that $40 million flash before his eyes on Wednesday night.
Yeah, and he also wants to do it for the rest of his life. Like, money aside, like, what if the 1% chance that he tore his Achilles and he's never the same player? And we had all these conversations with DeMarcus Cousins about, you know, how many people have come back stronger from an Achilles or on par? And it was like Dominique Wilkins and one other person. I think Tom Haberstroh did a piece on it. But It's like, what if it's not even just the money? It's like, now he can't do this the rest of his life. Now he has to continue on with 4 credits in sports med and American history and drama and Roman Greek history 305. And maybe I'm talking about my undergrad here. I don't know.
There was a public speaking class at Georgetown that was very popular with all the basketball players.
Yeah, no doubt. And it's just silly. It's just silly. And the conversation, and then just like all of the spin off of it from college people who are flailing because, You know, the NCAA can say whatever they want. The diehard college guys don't want to watch Zion and Barrett in the G League. They don't want that. And It's like, oh, stop pretending you love this kid. I'm like, no one's pretending they love him or, you know, have some personal insight to his life. It's just like a really simple numbers equation that everyone who isn't invested in the college game is like, yeah, this seems like protect $40 million or not protect $40 million. Like, right. I don't know. Yeah,
and like Darren Rovell tweeted that he has a loss of value insurance policy for like $8 million, but it doesn't even kick in unless he falls to 16. The difference in salary, I looked it up, between 1 and 16 in the first year alone is like $6 million. And I think he said the full $8 million doesn't even convey unless he fell to the second round. So like he would still lose a F ton of money even with the loss of value policy. The whole conversation, it was just tiresome. It was like, I don't know. I just think we shouldn't, like, whatever Zion wants to do, that's cool by me. It's his choice. I'm not going to, like, sit and tell him how to live his life. But I don't think we should shame kids for wanting to protect themselves.
No. Yeah, absolutely. I think we're of the same mind here. And, like, if Zion was really like, man, I love Duke and I love this team and I love Coach K and RJ and Cam are my guys for life and I can't sit this out. No one would berate him for that, but we'd be like, man, I really hope nothing terrible happens because that would be unfortunate for you. But like, no one's going to like yell at him and be like, oh no, you're making a terrible mistake. Right. It's just like, it's the neutral observers who aren't college basketball fans who are like, well, it seems like an unnecessary risk for, and which Nets player, I had this on my mind, there's a Nets player when everything was going down with DeAndre Ayton last year who was like $41 or something. That someone paid for him to have like food on the road that they shouldn't have.
Yeah, was it? Oh man, was it Dinwiddie?
It was. I don't know. It was somebody on the Nets, and it was like they got a hot meal on the road, and the NCAA wanted that money back. Right. And I was like, everyone's gonna sing this song, and then we're gonna find out that somebody bought Zion a foot long from Subway. He's going to be under investigation from the FBI because that's not a gross misallocation of cash. And then we're going to have this conversation again and talk about how stupid it is. Like,
exactly. Yeah. Duke's entire season is going to get wiped out or have an asterisk next to it, just like the Derrick Rose season in Memphis.
He's going to walk through a hotel and get like a carabiner with someone's marketing info on it. Did you pay for that carabiner, Zion?
Well, I think this is actually a perfect way to segue into the one-and-done rule, because I think that's another big part of it. Like, again, if the one-and-done rule didn't exist, I don't know that we see Zion Williamson in college or see RJ Barrett or see Cam Reddish in college. And what appears to be a coincidence, or is allegedly a coincidence, is that a day after the Zion injury happens, Jeff Zilke of USA Today comes out and says the NBA has submitted a proposal to the Players Association that would lower the draft eligible age to 18 from 19, which would effectively, as far as I know, eliminate the one-and-done rule or come. I mean, I guess there could be some 17-year-olds in high school that would have to still take a gap year, but would at least create more of a pathway for kids to go right from high school to college.
Yeah, and, the Jonathan Abrams book about the history of the one and done and kids coming from school. I mean, there were a lot of sad cases early on, but in the 2000s, we had a lot of success stories. And I don't know, like, at the end of the day, let's say you're someone with a year of college who would have benefited from a year of college and moved up the draft board to, say, 5, and you started at 22. Is going to a playoff team with playoff coaching and veterans really a worse situation? I don't think it is. Like, this rule should exist for so many reasons, but the constant argument that kids aren't ready and would benefit from, you know, being the star on their own team in college coaching, I just don't even know if that holds water in the grand scheme.
Right. Yeah, I mean, part of me, because I read that Abrams book too, and, like, you're right, there were a lot of really tragic stories about kids who were hyped up and, you know, got drafted somewhat high and then just busted out because they weren't mature enough to land in the league. But I also wonder, you know, that was, what, like, almost 15 years ago at this point? Like, I feel like teams have just gotten smarter about player development over that time. Like, I think they're better equipped to realize, like, all right, you know, this kid, he's not going to be a franchise savior at this age. Like, you're just not going to find that many prospects who are ready coming out of high school to come in and be, like, a top option on your team. I mean, even a guy like DeAndre Ayton came, you know, he spent a year in college, he's the number one pick. The Suns are effing terrible. But, like, that's fine. Like, that's totally fine. Like, that's almost expected. If you're getting that high of a pick, you're probably a very bad team, and you're probably not in a position to win right away. And, like, you just gotta let these young kids take their lumps. No one's calling DeAndre Ayton a bust, or I hope. I haven't seen anything. I mean, I guess
No one intelligent.
I guess Luka's kind of overshadowed him the whole year. But, you know, he's putting up numbers, he's playing well, it's just he's on a terrible team. So, yeah, I mean, I do wonder if, like, the player development angle, especially with the G League, as you mentioned, like, part of me wonders if the solution to, like, all of these overarching problems is you let the kids come out of high school, they get drafted, they get their full rookie-scale salary, but then you can just push them in the G League all year if they're not ready.
Yeah, absolutely. Add a third round of the draft. Mm-hmm. And let guys get stashed. I mean, look at baseball, look at hockey. There are top 10 picks that don't come into the league for years. And it's not because they're a bust or not because there isn't faith from the organization or any of that. It's just, okay, their bodies aren't ready. They're not physically ready, but they have a gift. And we're going to work on that. And they're going to have, you know, elite pros type coaching, but we're going to have it in our system. And we're going to have, you know, a say in how they live their life and give them direction and hook them up with veterans and do all the things we can do as an organization to make them successful rather than they hope that somewhere else does it for us and then take a chance on them. I mean, why not? And then those kids get make more money out of the gates too. I talked to Kwame Brown a couple years ago, who is another guy who, you know, came out of high school, might not have been ready, had a tough career, a lot of pressure for Michael Jordan to succeed, of all people, to succeed. Yeah. And I asked him, I was like, you know, if you could go back and do it again, like, do you think you would go to college and take a few years? And would that have helped you be a better NBA player? And he was like, no, absolutely not. Like, Of course not. Like, I got to go play with Michael Jordan and I made a lot of money. Like, it's still the right decision. All kids should be able to have that option. I'm like, there's a horror story by all accounts. Like, that's not how he saw his career going. Didn't accomplish, I'm sure, anything close to what people hoped for him, but it was still the best deal on the table. And at the end of the day, he got to make millions and play in the NBA. So, I mean, it's not the worst bad outcome.
Right. Yeah, I think that's my favorite reductive argument is, like, oh, well, these kids benefit from college because they get to go under the tutelage of a Mike Krzyzewski and they learn so much and they get to develop in a, like, they have a college weight training coach. And it's like, what do you think they're going to do in the NBA? Like, in college, they have to pretend to care about classes, and, like, they still have to go to classes. They have to devote some of their time not to basketball. Like, in the NBA, it's their job. They could spend all day playing basketball, get, like, working with professional weight trainers and strength and development coaches and have a diet plan created just for them. Like, comparing a college training staff to a professional NBA training staff is absurd.
Oh, it's nuts. And, I mean, like, the dietitians, biofeedback workers, facilities at all times. We're only a few years removed from like a massive scandal about players talking about how hungry they are on the road.
Right.
Like, I mean, no, there's no shortage of food being offered to NBA. Like, it's an insane argument. And I think about, I'm trying to think who wrote the piece for ESPN, and it's escaping me right now, so I feel bad. But he wrote a piece about Michael Jordan on his 50th birthday. And in it, there was like a really heavy part of the column talking about, you know, he was at Michael's, you know, parents' place, and he was cleaning out, you know, a safe. And there was a bunch of letters that he'd sent back and forth to his parents when he was at UNC. And in them, he was talking about how every letter he signed off with, like, I'm always hungry, can you send, like, food vouchers and stuff. And I'm like, Michael Jordan went hungry in college. And I know that's a long time ago. I'm not saying it's like that everywhere today. But I'm like, right. That's insane. That just doesn't happen when you're making millions of dollars playing in the NBA.
Right. Right, exactly. Yeah, like, as long as you don't go to the Sixers, who will, like, poison you if you have some sort of peanut/sesame allergy that they all know about. Or just, like, if you're a rookie, just don't go to the Sixers in general. Because, like, an increasingly weird series of circumstances will happen to you. And I really don't know what could possibly be weirder than a thoracoscopy because you have a sesame allergy that no one knows about. But we've gone from Markel Fultz's shoulder to now Zaire Smith, which makes me, like, I hope they just trade away their 2019 first-round pick. Like, just spare someone of that indignity.
The Sixers leave this uncomfortable zone around the line where, like, can we make these jokes? And these things are happening, but, like, oh, man, it feels weird to be, like, whoever they draft isn't going to play for at least 1 year. Like, you know?
At this point, it's, like, set in stone. Like, I think the last one – oh, I guess TLC actually probably made it through the whole year. But, like – so, like, him and Okafor played 50 games, and then, like, everyone else, just some weird circumstance, and it just keeps getting weirder every year. So I'm almost happy they got rid of their 2020 first-rounder in the Tobias Harris trade. That means we get one more healthy player in the next season.
Whoever writes the book on the last 10 years of the Sixers, whether that's Bodner or whoever, it's just going to be amazing. Amazingly terrible in the most awesome way as a non-Sixers fan, but for yourself, I don't know, it might be a horrifying experience.
More painful than not when you, I think the chapters about the Colangelo era and the medical staff will make me just, like, tear those pages out and burn them afterward. But so on the one and done stuff, it sounds like it's gonna happen. They're eyeing 2022 apparently. And Zilgit said they want to give teams ample time to prepare for the change. They're hoping to reach an agreement in the next few months. I mean, it sounds like there's some serious momentum going in this direction. But it is interesting. Like, if they don't agree to it by the draft or even before, by July 1st, like, teams are already starting to trade 2022 picks away. And, like, now that adds a little something extra to the equation. Like, I wonder how many picks we see this summer. Like, how many teams are gunning for 2022 picks in general? Because, in theory, like, this is the double draft. Like, this is the one where you're going to have, you know, the best prospects from high school and all the ones coming out of college that would normally be coming out. So, in theory, this is going to be, you know, who knows? Like, we never know the strength of a draft class 3 years down the road, but, like, in theory, this should be the deepest draft class in a long time.
Yeah, and I mean, you do what you can, but I'm honestly, if we could do it sooner, I would just do it sooner. Like, I know it's a strategic advantage for those tanking teams, but no, are we really that worried about the Knicks and Suns getting an extra crack at? Right. There's a reason these teams have been Minnesota, Sacramento, good for them this year, but have been in the lottery for a decade. Like, there's organizational issues, but yeah, at the end of the day, let's get these kids in the league. Let's leave that option open. Let's continue to develop the G League. I really do think a functioning G League that not only is an option, but that people are proud of and starts to draw in fans and names will really change a lot of this for teams. Like, everyone having an affiliate and it being a viable option and not seen as some sort of demotion, but rather a chance to improve and be part of something from an earlier age. I think that's the way.
Yeah, I think a lot of it, as you said before, it's like you just need to have some bigger name players in there. And if you have these guys, if you have these first round picks who don't view it as a demotion, and most of them or all of them at least spend some time in the G League, I think that will draw in some interest, because then you get to see, like, all right, this is in theory the next generation of my team. Like, I should be interested in this. It's the balance of then, like, well, if a team spends a first round pick, if you spend the number one overall pick, like, your fans are going to want to see that player in action right away. Like, it, you know, you're selling hope usually, especially with the number one overall pick. Like, that guy's supposed to change your franchise, you know, barring something Anthony Bennett-esque. But, like, you know, even in Andrew Wiggins, like, he has not lived up to expectations, but, like, he did theoretically change the trajectory of the Timberwolves franchise.
I guess this is the positive for RJ Barrett. Him no longer going number one takes that pressure, that onus off his shoulders to just develop and be a good player without the worries that Bennett and Wiggins faced, I guess.
Yeah. Is he going to take over the Maple Jordan moniker from Wiggins?
Oh, yeah. Wiggins is big dead to a lot of Canadians. not coming out for the national team after his first year in the league, which is the biggest cuff in the face.
Oh, yeah.
And there's been a lot since then. You know, he's very, he doesn't get the same coverage, but there's been some manipulative tactics from his camp. So, yeah, Wiggins' lack of production and some of the other stuff that's gone on the national team. Yeah, everyone's moved on to Jamal Murray. There was, like, a push for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander earlier in the year. Nice. So Barrett would have to be terrible not to inherit the throne. He'd have to be just awful.
Oh, poor Andrew Wiggins. There's more. Also, not the biggest Andrew Wiggins fan out there, so this podcast has not had many nice things to say about him. I still believe.
If he turned it around, and I think he'd have to go somewhere else, but if he turned it around, became a good player, and he came out for Team Canada, I would flip back in a heartbeat, because I saw this kid in the gym when he was like 16 and was so ready to believe that Canada had its next star coming, but yeah, he's cut me deep. He's hurt me too many times before.
Well, I want to transition to our next topic and talk about something that Andrew Wiggins is probably not going to sniff for a while, the All-Star Game. because Mort sent me this link the other day with comments from Jeff Van Gundy. And, you know, it was like, Jeff Van Gundy has an idea how to fix the All-Star Game. Get rid of it. He called it a bastardization of the game that is beautiful to watch. He said, you can be a Division III player like myself and be All-Star MVP. All you have to do is drive in and shoot a layup. So his idea is that he would name All-Stars, they would have All-Star Weekend, but then they just wouldn't play a game. Because he's particularly cited the number of threes they shot. I guess they shot a record 167 threes, and he called that an embarrassment. So I wanted to get your take on Jeff Van Gundy's solution to All-Star Game.
Well, so Jeff Curmudgeon Van Gundy.
Yeah.
he's not totally wrong. Like, what he cited, the three-pointers, it's the lack of effort. It's the lack of intensity. It's not the shot selection. It's not the fact that they're trying to throw down. It's just the lack of effort, and it does suck. I mean, I won't lie. This is the first time in 14 years where I haven't watched the whole All-Star Game. I just couldn't be into it. I watched the first little bit of the first quarter, and I came back for the last 10 minutes. It's just not fun. It isn't fun. But at the end of the day, like, we're not going to scrap it. Like, these guys like it. It's become a who's who of the NBA, just at the Team USA camps. It's a chance for players to talk about their future. It is fun. It's fun for media. It's fun for the players. The break is necessary. So, All-Star Weekend a whole staying. I do wish there was a way to incentivize the game somehow where we could watch the best 24 players in the league in theory really play a real game. And, you know, like, we talk about, I don't want to be hypocritical because we talk about Zion getting hurt. And there is, it would suck to get hurt, someone seriously get hurt in an All-Star game. And that potentially have, you know, ramifications for their season. But these guys play, you know, real tough games in the gyms in the summer. They go to Rucker Park. I mean, the chances of a guy getting hurt in an All-Star game, especially guys playing, like, when you can thin the bench and everyone can play, you know, 15 to 20 minutes. And we should be able to get a product, better product than we do, and I sympathize there. But, like, the bastardization of the game, like, all of the over-the-top rhetoric, it's too much. But I am with them. I wish there was something that we could feasibly do, because all of the solutions that get proposed every year, and I do it, and we all blog about it, like, they're just, there hasn't really been a realistic solution yet.
Right. Yeah, like, it's, so far they tried throw more money at them, but it turns out when you're making $150 or $200 million, like, a $1 million bonus just doesn't do it for you. I don't even know how much the bonus is. I don't even know if it's $1 million anymore. It, like, you could go the award home court advantage route, but that's terrible. No, I don't think anyone's, I hope no one is actively campaigning on that, because that's the worst idea. Like, especially because there's not even a West versus East anymore. It's just team LeBron versus team whatever, team Giannis, I guess. Yeah, I mean, I think, like, All-Star Weekend, I think basketball Twitter needs to remember that it's not for us. Like, the whole NBA season is for us. Like, the regular season is for us. Like, a random, you know, like, Kings-Warriors game, which is super fun every time, that's for us. And that's, like, any games on League Pass are for us. Like, All-Star Weekend's for kids. I mean, that's what it comes down to. Like, the dunk contest is for kids. Everyone hates the dunk contest because you're not 12 years old anymore. But if you were 12 and you saw, like, Hamidou Diallo dunk over Shaquille O'Neal, you lose your, you know, you lose your marbles. Like, it's just fun. It's supposed to be fun. And, like, yeah, I wish, too, that we could get a more competitive game. But, like, we see that in the Olympics every 4 years. Like, we do see...
Do we?
I mean... They try harder. Like, Team USA actually tries at the Olympics. I don't know.
There's sometimes.
Not a, yeah. There's not a, like, a comparable amount of talent on the other side is the problem.
Yeah.
But, you know, we do see that caliber of play, like, actually try on defense, which you could not necessarily say in the All-Star game.
You say that, but then I'm thinking back. I'm like, well, Matthew Dellavedova, Patty Mills, and Andrew Bogut making a game competitive should just never happen. but like, I'm with you. And honestly, though, this year, like, everyone craps on the dunk contest. I poo-pooed the dunk contest a lot the last 10 years. And I came up with Vince making the dunk contest great again. But that Diallo dunk was great. Like, I was on the couch tweeting about how bored I was, like everyone else, being a Twitter NBA Twitter snob. But when Diallo dunked, when he honey dipped over Shaq, I was excited. That was a great, great dunk. So, like, I think people have to be a little bit more open to, like, let yourself be wowed if you can still be wowed. Like, you don't have to hold the position of we can do better when something great actually happens. Because that was a great dunk. Like, my students, like, you know, teaching grade six, they thought that was a great dunk. I thought that was a great dunk. That was objectively a great dunk. Was the contest on a whole great? No. But was that dunk great? Yeah. And I think there's something to what you said. I would love to see something like maybe there's a scheduling advantage. You know, like maybe the teams of the players, and it's harder now, it's not West East.
Right.
Because the teams of the players the next year when the NBA makes the schedule is guaranteed no back-to-backs. Or something. I don't know, just something. Yeah. Like, maybe there's just something. What do you want? Like, maybe just ask them. Has anyone sat down with the players union and be like, what would make you care? Like, what would make you sit down with Michelle Roberts, the new VPs, Jaylen Brown, who else was voted in?
Bismack Biyombo.
Bismack Biyombo, sit down with all the player VPs and all the reps and ask, like, what would make you guys actually compete? Mm-hmm. And just see, like, has that conversation happened yet? Like, you want to assume yes, but maybe not, you know? I don't know.
Right. Yeah, I think, like, Chris Paul met with Michelle Roberts a couple of years ago, and I think that's what led to the whole scrapping the East versus West thing. But, like, yeah, I mean, look, they made real progress this year. Last year, we didn't get the All-Star Draft televised. This year, we did, and it was great.
Like, it was fun.
Next year, we'll see what happens. I mean, I'm assuming the genie is out of the bottle with, like, televising the draft. Next year, maybe we get it during All-Star Weekend, which I know some people have been saying would be fun. Like, just have a literal playground-style draft with all the players on the court. Because then you get to see some real reactions. But, like, I thought this year was, like, just having the Inside the NBA panel was fun, and, like, Charles Barkley had a few just phenomenal jokes in there.
It was fun. I would be down for the play. I would love to see the reactions. Scrap the celebrity game. I don't need to see any more YouTube bloggers playing against watch players and celebrities. Like, half the time through the celebrity game, I'm like, who is that? Like, who, yeah. If I don't know who they are they celebrity? Like, I don't know. But just scrap that and give us, like, get all the players out, have a ceremony, have a concert, have a party, and then do the All-Star draft on stage. And then we can watch, like, everyone's face when Giannis takes Chris Middleton first of the reserves and like all that. And when Ben Simmons and Russell Westbrook got traded and had to like switch sides on the stage. I mean, that'd be great TV. I'd be into that for sure.
I was still mad about that. I will never forgive Giannis for putting Ben Simmons on Team Tamper.
Yeah. I would love the E60 on LeBron's hotel room.
Yeah.
With the fine bottles from his wine estate. And the PowerPoint production that him and Clutch made for all of his fellow All-Stars.
Yeah.
Come to Los Angeles. And LeBron, do we have to do this? I don't know if we should be... No. This is my team. This is my team.
Yeah. He's like, did you not watch the All-Star draft? I said tampering rules do not apply on All-Star weekends.
It's true, though. Team USA camps and All-Star weekend are tamper-free zones, I think.
Yeah.
Anything flies. Yeah.
Well, did you see the... Did you not see the Kyrie Irving video? Which then he got super mad about?
Which also, man, like, I haven't had a chance. We're going to discuss that on my podcast later today. But what do you expect? Like, should people be taking videos of NBA players when they're having private conversations? No, it's not ethical. However, like, anyone that sees you is going to do that. That's the era we live in. You should know better. I honestly do not pity NBA players who make millions of dollars playing basketball because fans are interested in what they're doing, where they're going to go. Like, it's part of the gig. You should have known better. And for him to freak out like that, it's just like, it's hilarious too, because once again, like, he could have just shut down. We were talking about this. I'm still committed to the Boston Celtics. Would have ended those questions, but instead he led the dog and pony show. And here we are, like,
right. Like, both of these guys have been super sketchy about their intentions. Like, Kyrie came out early in the year and said, I plan on resigning. And then, like, recently was like, ask me July 1st, which did not inspire a lot of confidence in his earlier statement. So, like, they've been sketchy for months about what they're going to do. Of course, there's major interest in, like, two top 10, top 15 players who could really shift the paradigm of the league. Like, if KD leaves the Warriors and Kyrie leaves the Boston Celtics, they both go to the Knicks, which, you know, he's holding up his two fingers. Like, everyone read into that as him saying the Knicks have two max slots.
I think that's what they were talking about, too. People were like, oh, that's not, I think it was. And they could say that. Honestly, I wouldn't mind the transparency approach. Yeah, you know, we were at All-Star Weekend, and we were talking about how much fun it would be to play together, like we have on Team USA, and what we could do, and it would be cool. And we don't know if that's going to happen, but it's definitely something we thought about. Okay, yeah, we all aren't stupid. We knew you were thinking about it. Like, we've been all thinking about it. But just don't get mad at people for wanting to know all of the best league and this league. And, like, it's all about player movement. It's not even about the games anymore. Like, we know Golden State is winning, the fatalistic approach, as you said. People aren't interested in that. People aren't interested in, like, who's going to win the second round? Like, they're interested in, like, who's going to win next year? Where are the stars going? Like, is Golden State finally not going to be a brick wall? So it's what the people are talking about. It's what media members have to ask about. It's what fans are going to be interested in. Get over it. I don't envy the media circuit in New York if Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving have to give quotes every night.
It's truly like the worst possible fit, except for like maybe Kawhi in New York, just because Kawhi's so silent. But like, so they would just ask him questions and he would just sit there like stone faced. But aside from that, like, I mean, I guess that might even be worse, that Kyrie and KD will clap back. Whereas I don't think Kawhi would just like not feed into it. He would just stare dead eyes until someone else asked a question. Whereas, you know, KD had this 3-minute rant against Ethan Sherwood Strauss the other day.
Oh man, Kyrie and Kevin Durant on a New York media circuit for a year would be incredible in such a terrible fit. Kyrie's got like the galaxy brain, so like a question about basketball becomes about the state of the world and consumerism, and people. And then Durant's got the victim mentality, where like even this morning I was seeing like somebody asked him about him and Marvin Bagley having a back and forth the other day, and he's like, "No, I got him 5 times. He got me once." And everyone laughed, and he didn't laugh. And I'm like, dude, just take a breath. Like, you won the game. People were just asking you, like, you said you wanted basketball questions. And he's like, it wasn't a back and forth. He only got me once. I got him 5 times. How is that a back and forth? I'm like, he's the least fun guy in the world, man. Like, you make $35 million a year to play basketball in the NBA, and people want to ask you about it. Like, chill. Like, ah, man.
Yeah, like, you're about to almost guaranteed the three-peat. Like, maybe just take a breather, buddy.
You think you could have more fun in that position than he's having, honest. Like, genuinely. If I was winning that much, I was making that much money, and I was playing basketball every day, I would be loving life. It speaks to the article that Strauss wrote. It speaks to everything that everyone has said, that he is just not loving it.
We say that because we don't have, like, millions of people tweeting snake emojis at us every day.
Oh, that's another issue. Like, what the media asks you versus, like, what fans say on social media is totally different, because fans can be vile. People can be vile. I don't even know. I would probably never look at my mentions if I was an athlete. Never, oh, ever, no. ever.
Yeah, never.
Yeah.
I mean, allegedly there's a way to, like, if you're verified, you could only see what other verified people are saying, and I feel like that would be the column I keep up, but oh my god. I mean, if you're an athlete, your mentions just must be, like, constantly going. Like, I don't even know how you could look at them. Like, if I was on TweetDeck, it would just be, like, a never-ending stream that I couldn't even, like, stop and look at one tweet. It would just keep going down and down and down.
And you would only see the comments that pick up steam. Yeah. And the ones that pick up steam about Kevin Durant are often jokes about him and, you know, snake emojis and all that stuff. So, yeah, it would suck. Don't get me wrong. Right. And I honestly have no problem with athletes coming out and blasting fans who conduct themselves in a rather crappy way. Mm-hmm. But then just do it from your actual account and don't lie about it. Don't smoke your former teammates in the process.
Like, yeah, talk to Brian Colangelo about how burner accounts go.
Yeah, but honestly, if you're a player and someone's saying something unfair about you and you want to combat it, like, the one knock on Kevin Durant is, like, why does he care about what people think about him? Like, well, I care. I think most people care about what people think about them. When things that are inaccurate or you feel are inaccurate are said about you, you want to correct them. So I have no problem with him coming out and defending himself. It's just the way that he's done it sometimes. And then the, I don't care what anyone thinks, as I like every tweet mentioning me this morning.
Right.
Yeah.
Ugh. Well, since we're talking about the Warriors, we should talk about one actual on-court story this week. And I think DeMarcus Cousins is that story. Because, again, look, like, it's the people are working their way back from the All-Star break. I think, like, the only guy who's played well, there's, like, two guys, Buddy Hield and Lauri Markkanen, and everyone else has been terrible. So I don't want to read too much into anyone's struggles so far. But, you know, Boogie made his debut a month ago at this point. The Warriors just said his minutes limit is... They're willing to increase it, at least. Like, I think it was limited at about 25 minutes a game prior to the break. They're open to, it's like the next phase of his rehab. But he's started to struggle a little bit as of late. You know, he didn't close the game against the Kings on Thursday. And afterward, Draymond said, like, look, Boogie's getting frustrated. It's understandable. He wants to be out there. But sometimes we're going to have to rely on the death lineup. Sometimes I'm not going to be out there. Sometimes Iggy's not going to be out there. It just changes on a game-to-game basis. You know, that said, in four of his last five games, he's had a negative plus-minus rating on the floor. He was a minus 17 last night against the Rockets in that six-point loss without James Harden. It seems like his lateral quickness just isn't there, which is frankly understandable. He suffered a major injury, and he was never that fleet of foot on defense anyway. But I do want to ask, you know, you mentioned the Warriors' fatalism. Like, everyone assumes this three-peat's in the bag. Do you think, no pun intended here, but do you think DeMarcus Cousins could be their Achilles heel come playoff time?
I don't. Like, I see the possibility, like, and I get his frustration. And the Kerr quote in the article that you sent me before we recorded sounded very, like, panicky Kerr, like, oh, yeah, we understand. Of course we understand. And we support our guy. And, like, let's just pour water on this fire before it really burns. And,
right.
And I get it, but I think he's smarter than people give him credit for. Like, yeah, he's emotional. Yeah, he's not in the best shape of his career. Yeah, he's going to sit some fourth quarters. He might sit more than that. Like, in a real series against the Rockets, when Paul and Harden are playing the way that they play, which is switch till they get what they want, and, you know, ISO. Like, maybe he only plays 15 minutes a game in that series, and he'll have to be okay. But I also think, like, this is a guy who said, I'm worth max money, and everyone said, no, you're not.
Yeah.
And so he said, I'm going to the Warriors. F you. I don't think he's going to put down that middle finger and turn it around on the Warriors. Like, I think he's committed. He knew what this was. Kerr has said over and over, they had an honest conversation about, you know, what would his role look like, and everyone has to sec. I think he's smarter than people think, and I think while this will be hard for him and he'll get some texts before the end of the year, I think he'll figure it out and bow his head and do what the team asks him to do, you know, and what he's capable of. But that being said, like, I think there will be some speed bumps between now and then, and you know, Draymond and him have similar personalities. Like, they're both competitive. They both get a little too hot. But Draymond's just been in the culture of winning. Boogie hasn't. And I think, you know, when it gets to the playoffs and they smoke whoever they smoke in the first round, he'll start to pick it up. He'll figure it out. Winning is fun in the playoffs.
Right, yeah. And I mean, he hasn't experienced that, as you said. Like, that. I mean, that's the reason he signed with this team is, you know, like, I guess technically – he made it to the playoffs last year by virtue of being on the Pelicans, but he was hurt. Like, he hasn't played in a playoff game yet. Having that opportunity is why he signed with the Warriors. Like, yes, he went ring chasing to some extent, but, like, he does give them an element they were missing in, you know, just a giant body who can actually gobble up rebounds. Like, he could be a liability, as you said, defensively. I mean, he admitted it. Guys are attacking me in the pick and roll. It's obvious. I just got to be ready for it, be prepared for it, try to stay out of effing foul trouble, is what he said last night. So, like, those are problems that he's had throughout his career. They didn't go away after he suffered a major injury. It's only exacerbated at this point. So, as you said, like, in certain matchups, he will be limited to fewer minutes than he would be in others. But, I mean, I'm just not sounding the alarm on him yet. Like, there's still almost 2 months until the playoffs. Whoever they face in the first round, I just don't think they have anyone to be scared of down there. Like, the Kings are super fun. Like, I hope it's the Kings and the Warriors in the first round.
Me too, for sure. But, yeah, me too.
But I don't think, you know, I just don't think that's a matchup the Warriors fear. I don't think the Warriors have anyone they fear in the West, really. I mean, I don't think the Warriors have anyone they fear in either conference, but, like, if I'm the Warriors, the scariest team in the league that isn't me is the Milwaukee Bucks.
Yeah, and I mean, like, via their quotes, they think it's Boston, but Boston has their own warts to work on. And I mean, honestly, I wouldn't be scared of anyone. Like, why would – like, Boogie's just an extra. Like, that's the thing. Like, Boogie was always just an extra. And if it isn't working, you can sit him. Yeah. Hell, if it goes the worst case and he throws a tantrum and – he punches somebody, like, whatever, send him away from the team. You still have a team that won back-to-back titles. And it's such a position of wealth that it's hard to fathom. And I think, like, Kerr will figure it out. Kerr will stagger him more. And think about some of the Kerr lineups we've seen in the playoffs over the years where both Durant and Curry sit, and they're running the offense for, like, Kevon Looney and right. Nick Young and other people. Like, let Boogie have that 8 minutes. Let him have that 6 minutes and just feed him. And if he scores 4 points on six possessions, oh well. He got his touches. Like, whatever you have to do that works, like, let him, when you get Portland again, and Portland, we have to watch you smack Portland for the 18th time this decade. Let him just beat up on Myers Leonard and Enes Kanter and whatever when they roll those guys out. Like, I think there's a way to do it. I think Kerr's a very smart coach. I think he's a good manager of personalities. Mm-hmm. He's done a really good job there with Draymond and some of those other guys. I think it'll be fine. But, like, I also think people, like myself, would love to see the Warriors fall on their face and end this reign of terror. So they're like, oh, yeah, let's hope Boogie just combusts. Let's hope Boogie is the chaos we need to end the Warriors. I just right. I don't think so. Like, he didn't go there because he thought he was going to be their MVP. He went there because he was mad at everyone else. He was like, screw it. If I can't have my money, I'm going to win a ring. Like,
yeah.
You know? And so there he is.
Right. And, like, yeah, I mean, I think you brought up a really good point about Kerr, and that as good of as he is in terms of, like, in-game management, I think his biggest asset is his ability to manage personalities. And I think that will be especially valuable with a volatile guy like Cousins. But as you said, too, like, he's a free agent this summer. The Warriors can only retain him effectively if KD and Klay both leave, because they're just limited in what they can offer him if they're over the cap. So he's playing for his next contract. Like, he has to be on his best behavior, and he knows that. He's a smart guy. Mm-hmm. Like, he knows that, you know, if I want to get the money I think I'm owed this summer, like, I need to prove that I can contribute in whatever role they ask me to do, and I could do it, you know, willingly. I'm not, like, grumbling in private or public about it. To me, I think his comments last night and the other day, and, like, Draymond Green's comments about him being frustrated, it feels to me like he's just frustrated more with himself than he is with Kerr and with the rest of the Warriors. Like, I think he understands the situation. I just think he's, like, bummed that he's still not back to being, you know, the 25-10-5 guy that he was prior to his injury, which makes sense. Like, it sucks to... I just think we, in general, like, underplay how hard it is for these guys to come back from major injuries. And the same thing's happening with Gordon Hayward. Like, you know, Boston fans have been all over him this year. He's coming back from, like, his ankle pointing the wrong way. Like, it's a really tough thing to come back from, to have faith in your body. And, you know, when you're an athlete, like, that's your entire sense of purpose is, do I have trust in my body to do the things that it was able to do at one point? It takes a lot of time.
Yeah, for sure. And like, that's, you know, something with society is, like, if you're emotional, you're not smart. Like, he can be emotional and be smart and be aware. Like, mm-hmm. he's emotional because, he went through a terrible injury and he wants to come back and be a superhero on the court, and he's not there yet. Like, he's moving like an ant defensively and moving like Treebeard on defense in today's pace and space NBA is not great. But, you know, maybe he'll get back. And again, like, if this is who he is, and if he's never going, you know, like you said, he's never been fleet of foot, but if he's always going to be a mobile wreck for the rest of his career, like, he needs to show that he can bow his head and be a team guy. And there's still a role for someone with his size and skill set, you know, for 20, 25 minutes a night, even if he can't move his feet, so long as he's a team player. And so, like, mm-hmm. I'm sure he knows that. If he doesn't know, I'm sure his agent knows that. If his agent doesn't know, I'm sure Kerr knows that. Like, you know, there are a lot of smart people working in and around the NBA.
Right, exactly. And as you said, like, even if you can't match up with the Montrezl Harrell, like, put him against Portland, and he's got Jusuf Nurkić and Enes Kanter for 48 minutes a game, like, he will be immensely useful in that series. I think he's going to be a matchup-by-matchup guy. And, you know, in the West, putting him against a Nikola Jokic would be interesting. I don't know how well he will fare in that matchup, but against, like, a big bruiser like Steven Adams, or like Nurkić, like a Rudy Gobert, guys who can't stretch the floor, guys who you don't really fear, you know, like, you would encourage them to take mid-range two-pointers. Like, that's the best possible scenario. So I think in those types of matchups, he's going to have plenty of value. And I think the rest of the regular season for the Warriors, they don't care about seeding. I mean, if they follow the two seed, they don't care. They're not falling below two. The rest of the regular season is just getting DeMarcus Cousins comfortable with the rest of their starting lineup, and just in general. Because if he, you know, if he rounds more back into form over these next 2 months, they're going to enter the favorites enter the playoffs as overwhelming favorites.
Yeah, more so than already.
Right.
And here's my thing, too, and this is, like, kind of another direction, but, like, I'm a big believer that the NBA is headed to a five-wing league. Mm-hmm. Like, I think the NBA is, like, Ben Simmons is what people are hoping for, 1-5. Like, guys that can do everything, switch all over. And I watched Rudy Gobert, who is the Defensive Player of the Year, get played off the floor in the PNR. Mm-hmm. You know, I watched Joel Embiid get played off the floor against Boston. Like, if the best defensive bigs in the NBA can get exposed in the pick and roll and in isolation and on switches, then, like, so then of course DeMarcus Cousins can. Of course Jusuf Nurkić can. That it's just maximizing the time that you're out there in the matchups that you have. And that's, you know, a big part of the NBA today. So I don't think, I'm not even worried about the lateral movement so much as, like you said, like, is his temperament okay? And if this was a situation where he thought 20 points was his only way to money, then I'd worry. But I think he has talked this through and thought this through, and they're going to be okay. I mean, it would take a Titanic moment for the Warriors to really screw this up.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think the league is shifting toward Ben Simmons as long as he isn't a coward. That's the trick.
It's funny because, like, that smack talk with him and Nurkić.
Oh, my God.
It's like, Ben is a great player. Like, I feel like the coward comments have gone so far as, like, people think Ben's, like, overrated or not that good. Like,
Right.
I would take Ben Simmons if we did a redraft right now in my top 12. I think he's that talented. Mm-hmm. But he's also a very big target so long as he doesn't want to shoot. Right. And so for him to talk any smack, it's just going to turn out terribly for him because he is the most visible flaw of any player in the NBA. But that said, I mean, he's still tremendous. In that game, he had, what, 27, 12, and 6 in a losing effort? Like,
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, I didn't even watch the game yesterday because I knew what was going to happen. And I was like, this is a mental health day for me. Just no need to spend 2 hours on that. But then when I came back home and saw that quote, I was like, oh, my God. How did I can only imagine Twitter's reaction when that video first popped up.
Yeah. I mean, good for him for talking that trash. It's entertaining to me. But, like, you got to know when teams play a five guys in the key defense against you, right. It's going to come back rather quickly. Like,
if nothing else, I feel like that probably endeared him more to Embiid than anything yet.
Yeah.
I feel like Embiid was like, oh, okay, we're simpatico. We can make this work long term, Ben. All right.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's a good place to wrap up. So, Josh, thanks again for joining us today. One more time, could you let our listeners know where to find you on Twitter and where to find your work?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at Josh Eberle, and all of my stuff goes to NBA Canada or Hoop Magazine. So give me a follow and check out my pod and check out my stuff. And Brian, thanks for having me on. Mort, thanks for being sick.
We'll definitely have you back on again when Mort is feeling better. I think the flu has wiped out his house for the week, which is no good. But yeah, well, everyone keep Mort in your thoughts. He will be back soon. But yeah, Josh, thanks for joining us. Reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handles to give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. And we're now being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined today by Josh Eberle. Josh, have a good one, man.